Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Vox Talk for the week of Tuesday the 11th of November. My name is Ross and I'm compiling this week's edition. This week's news items were collected from the local Oxford papers, with news being selected and read by Ralph Wares and Christine Churchill. Sunrise for the upcoming week will be around 7:15 a.m, with sunset being around 4:20 p.m. The copying and distribution of the USBs is by Michelle Lawful. Here, there will be some instructions on how to listen to OxTalk using your Alexa device, and at the end of the edition, you will hear how to access OxTalk online. In addition to this, you will hear a short collection of poems by Jenny.
Notice to listeners of OxTalk who may wish to use an Alexa smart speaker to access our service. To listen to OxTalk on an Alexa device, you can use the Talking Newspaper skill. You will need to first enable the skill. To do this, simply say, Alexa, enable talking newspaper. Then, to listen to OxTalk, please follow this procedure.
Alexa, open talking newspaper.
Welcome to your talking newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have any problems listening to OxTalk using an Alexa device, it could be due to the way that your device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set it up in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact OxTalk and we will try to help.
The arrival of autumn brings with it a symphony of colours, scents and emotions that resonate deeply within us. I'd like to read you 6 short poems about the beauty of this time of year. My first poem is entitled Autumn's Whisper. This poem encapsulates the subtle beauty of autumn, portraying the soft whispers of nature as it transitions from summer heat to winter chill. The leaves descend in quiet grace, as autumn's chill begins to trace a canvas rich with golden hue, the world transforms in colours new. In every rustle there's a tale of summer's end and a cooling gale. The elegance of change unfolds as nature writes her story bold. The second poem is entitled Harvest Moon's Embrace, and this poem reflects on the harvest season, celebrating the unity of land and community during the months of reaping and gathering. The harvest moon hangs high and bright, illuminating fields with silver light. A time to gather, a time to feast, in autumn's arms we are all released. The fruits of labour lie in heaps, in whispered dreams the harvest keeps. Together we rejoice and sing, in gratitude for all that fall brings. The next poem is called Dance of the Leaves. This poem captures the playful spirit of autumn leaves as they swirl and dance in the crisp air, symbolising life's fleeting moments. A dance begins with every breeze, as leaves descend from mighty trees in spirals of orange, red and gold, their stories in the wind retold. Each leaf a dream that soon must fade, in autumn's court a grand parade, a fleeting moment, laughter's call, reminding us to cherish all. The next little poem is called Autumn's Palette, And this poem delves into the vibrant colours of autumn, celebrating the artistic display that nature offers during this time of year. A palette rich with fiery hues, as nature dons her brightest views. With brush in hand, she paints the scene in shades of amber, rust, and green. The sky reflects a softer light as day gives way to cooler night. In every glance, a masterpiece. Autumn's beauty will not cease. And the next poem is called A Walk in the Woods. And this poem invites the reader to join in a leisurely stroll through an autumn forest, experiencing the serenity of the season. A walk among the ancient trees, where rustling leaves dance in the breeze, the earth adorned in crisp array as autumn gently steals away. With every step, a crunching sound, as nature's beauty swirls around, in silence deep, our hearts align, with quiet moments we entwine. And then my last poem is called Golden Moments, and this piece captures fleeting instances in autumn, emphasising the beauty of appreciating the present. Golden moments come to light, as days dissolve into the night. Each breath a memory wrapped in gold, in fleeting time our lives unfold. Let not a second slip away, embrace the warmth of autumn's sway. In every smile, in every tear, the beauty of now holds us near.
The County Council has been accused of making life harder for people going about their daily business by severing transport connections with its controversial congestion charge. Oxford Station now can't be accessed by car without passing a congestion charge point, hitting passengers using public transport, which the authority claims to be promoting. The £5 charge was introduced last week by Oxfordshire County Council, with the aim of reducing congestion and speeding up bus journeys. The ongoing closure of Botley Road means cars cannot access the station without passing through Hythe Bridge Street or Thames Street, both of which are congestion charging points. Once Botley Road reopens, which is due to happen in August 2026, the congestion charge will be replaced by the traffic filters trial, where motorists will be fined for driving through the same roads as the congestion charge. Councillor Andrew Gant, Cabinet Member for Transport Management, said most people do not access the station by private car and suggested that other stations like Oxford Parkway and Didcot Parkway were suited to drivers who needed to catch the train. Labour City Councillor Linda Smith contacted Mr. Gant on the issue in June, when the proposal was first announced. She said she was astonished to be told by a council officer that drivers would be able to drop passengers off very close to the station without incurring a charge. She said, "It's typical of incompetent Oxfordshire County Council to be severing transport connections and making life harder for people going about their daily business, instead of promoting integrated transport systems and seamless connections between different modes of transport." Mr. Gant said, "The vast majority of people accessing Oxford Station already do so by modes other than the private car. These options have been significantly enhanced as a direct result of the congestion charge. For example, with the bus service 3 and 3A now running directly to the station from Rose Hill from 9th of November, specifically because of reduced congestion. Walking and cycling are also now safer, easier, cleaner and quicker. For travellers who do need to drive to catch or meet a train, enabling them to shift modes has always been a key part of our policy, which is why there are stations specifically called Parkway in North Oxford and at Didcot, enabling a wide range of options to move between modes and access the rail network.
Great Western Rail was contacted for comment, while Network Rail declined to comment.
The only white rhino born in the UK this year is proving a hit with visitors to Cotswold Wildlife Park. Marcus is the newest addition to the rhino family at Cotswold Wildlife Park and Gardens and is the 12th rhino calf to be born at the Burford site in 12 years. Attentive mother Nancy gave birth to a healthy male calf in less than 45 minutes, bringing an end to the 16-month pregnancy. Head keeper Mark Godwin, who has worked at the park for 35 years, witnessed Marcus's entry into the world. Having looked after the ever-growing Crash, the collective noun for a group of rhinos, for the last 12 years, he said that Marcus is one of the most confident calves he has ever seen. Newborns weigh approximately 70 kilos at birth and put on roughly 1.5 to 2 kilos a day in weight, said Mr. Godwin. If he grows into his features, he will be a big lad. The parks team explained how rhino births in captivity are extremely rare, as just 5 white rhinos were born in total in European zoological collections in 2025. Marcus's birth brings the total number of rhinos residing at the park to 8, which keeper says the highest number on show at any one time in the park's 55-year history. Mr. Godwin added, "It's also one of the largest family groups on show anywhere in the country." As well as filming the birth, we believe we may have also caught the conception on camera for the first time too. A memorable day for keepers and visitors alike, as Monty, the father's amorous intentions, lasted some considerable time and attracted quite the crowd. Reggie Hayworth, chairman of Cotswold Wildlife Park and Gardens, said the calf had been named in memory of conservation scientist Dr. Marcus Borner. Marcus gave me my break into conservation when he was head of Frankfurt Zoological Society in Tanzania, he explained. He appointed me project leader of FZS's Tanzania Rhino Conservation Programme in 1992. At the time, there was a known population of only 12 black rhinos in northern Tanzania and maybe a couple of dozen dotted around the rest of the country. So there remained maybe 50 in total in the whole country, from a population of 20,000 in 1970. The rest had all been wiped out by poachers in the 1980s. It is difficult to think of anybody else who had more of a positive influence on that outcome than Marcus Borner.
Five Oxfordshire pubs have been named among the top 100 in the UK. The Good Food Guide has published its inaugural list of the 100 best pubs in Britain, with several listed from our county. A total of 5 Oxfordshire watering holes have been selected due to nailing both the drinking and dining side of matters. Finishing the highest of the quintet is the Killingworth Castle on Glimpton Road in Woodstock, which places 17th in the list. Another highly ranked spot in the west of the county is the Bull on Sheep Street in Charlbury, with a 26th place finish. This comes after the Cotswold pub was recently named among the 20 best restaurants by Time Out, making it the sole Oxfordshire entry. The Double Red Duke on Boughton Road in Clanfield also makes the 100 best pubs in Britain list, coming in 41st. In 53rd place is the White Hart, which can be found on Main Road, Fifield, near Abingdon. Rounding off the Oxfordshire entries is the Greyhound Inn on Main Street in Letcombe Regis near Wantage, which comes in 84th position on the list. Editor of the Good Food Guide, Chloe Hamilton, said, "We went searching for the pubs that nail the drinking and dining side of the equation. It turns out the harder you look, the more you find, and they're not all hidden away in the Cotswolds."
This year's Oxford Christmas Light Festival is to include a Diwali-themed celebration. The annual event will see streets across Oxford illuminated with Christmas lights, handmade lanterns, light parades, LED displays and glow-in-the-dark drawings from November the 14th to 16th. There will also be light-themed activities for people to get involved in at home. They include the Light It Up project from the Museum of Oxford, which offers a downloadable template to make a historic gas lamp either at home or at in-person crafting sessions at the museum. The festival website will also provide resources to create different kinds of lights for home display, from jam jar lanterns to stained glass pictures. Community events around the city will also be centred around light. Rose Hill will host a street parade with giant moth creations and insect-inspired lanterns, while Cutterslow Park will feature a light trail with special activities. Ovada will celebrate Diwali with a Diya procession led by traditional dhol players, followed by light and art installations, food and refreshments at the gallery. The traditional Victorian market will be open all weekend in Broad Street, with decorated stalls selling crafts, gifts, seasonal foods and refreshments. On Saturday, November the 15th, people can head to Oxford's Covered Market for a visit from Father Christmas in Breakfast with Santa. Alex Hollingsworth, Cabinet Member for Planning and Culture, said, "The Oxford Christmas Light Festival is one of the highlights of Oxford's Christmas calendar, and this year will be another fantastic festival. With a range of events and activities to take part in at home or in the community, there's something for everyone. There will also be a host of events and activities across the weekend. This includes the Rose Hill Creative Lights Festival, which will celebrate British wildlife with a special focus on insects. There will be drop-in creative activities, a free community meal, and a vibrant parade. On Saturday, Pegasus Theatre on Magdalen Road will host a talking gift box puppet-making workshop for families. There will also be an interactive adventure for children to help save the world from darkness by rescuing stolen stars and sunbeams. The Lees College will also host Lees in Light, with City of Oxford College and University Centre Level 2 Creative Arts students creating lanterns using traditional willow frameworks and coloured paper for the event. These lanterns will be displayed from November the 12th in the community space next to the reception at the Lees College. Most events are completely free."
A major law firm has become the first tenant of a new £1.2 billion innovation district. Mishcon de Reyes Thames Valley team will occupy 3,500 square feet of office space at Oxford North, a new global innovation hub in Oxford designed to support the UK's science and technology sectors. The firm has signed a 5-year lease for the offices on the first floor of the Red Hall, a flagship workspace within the district's recently launched first phase. Kevin Darvishi, head of leasing at Stanhope, said, "Securing a blue-chip occupier at Oxford North is a strong endorsement of our vision to create the UK's leading purpose-built regional innovation campus, which caters to the whole science and technology life cycle ecosystem." The Red Hall offers 33,000 square feet of workspace across 4 floors, alongside an 80-seat cafe and a 100-seat town hall. The building is next to a timber cycle pavilion and overlooks Falaise Park and Falaise Square. Mishcon de Reyes Oxford North team serves sectors such as life sciences, healthcare, space and defence, AI, blockchain, deep tech, quantum, energy and climate. Nicola McConville, partner at Mishcon de Reyes, said, "We're delighted to be the first tenant in Oxford North's innovative new district. The Red Hall offers the ideal environment for us to collaborate, grow and support our clients in navigating the opportunities and challenges of the evolving innovation landscape."
Filming is set to take place on location at Oxford Stadium, with rumours that shooting is for a popular gangster series, Mobland. Householders living in the Blackbird Lees area have been told to expect the sound of gunfire and simulated violence as the film crew move in. Filming will soon begin in Sandy Lane, Littlemore, for what the production company calls a TV drama that follows the fates and fortunes of a London crime family. While not yet confirmed, it is believed the show could be Mobland and stars Tom Hardy and former James Bond star Pierce Brosnan. A letter circulated to residents said filming would take place within the stadium, its grounds, and in the street outside between November the 19th and 21st. Alex Hale, assistant location manager, wrote a letter to residents living in the Blackbird Leaves area. He wrote, "Please be advised that the nature of the scenes we wish to film will have an element of violence, and there may be the noise of gunfire at points. There will be some police vehicles parked in the car park, and actors in emergency service uniform. We will have a police advisor on our filming day, and all action will be choreographed by our experienced stunts team." Although filming starts on November the 19th, crews from the production company Fixer CMG will be in Oxford for preparation from November the 10th. We are very excited to be filming at Oxford Stadium in November, and we hope that when you see the final product on TV next year, you will be excited as we are, Mr. Hale added. Mobland depicts the story of two mob families in the UK clashing in a war that threatens to topple empires and lives. With 10 episodes in this first season, the cast also includes Dame Helen Mirren. The same production company will also be filming in the Cotswold village of Great Tew, the home of the Beckhams, from November the 23rd. Oxford Stadium had its glory days between 1939 and 2012, when crowds regularly enjoyed the thrilling spectacle of racing weekends. In their famous blue and yellow, the Oxford Cheetahs Speedway team were UK champions 5 times before the club folded in 2007. The inaugural Greyhound race was held on March the 31st, 1939, and it was one of the leading provincial tracks in the UK during the 1990s. When it was sold to the Greyhound Racing Association in 1999, things started to go wrong. Despite investments in the grandstand restaurant and racing service during the 2000s, it was taken over by Risk Capital Partners with development partner Galliard Homes in 2005. GRA said the stadium could not be profitable after a contract for large Greyhound meeting BAGS was lost in 2012.
A new guide aims to boost Oxfordshire's profile as a leading destination for business events. The latest edition of the Experience Oxfordshire Venues Guide, published by Experience Oxfordshire, highlights event spaces, service providers, and practical information to help organisers select county locations. It also supports the organisation's free venue finding service and will play a key role in promoting Oxfordshire to national and international buyers. The new guide will be used later this month at IBTM World in Barcelona, the leading global event for the meetings, incentives, conferences and exhibitions industry. Experience Oxfordshire will exhibit alongside Meet England, the national tourism agency, to promote the county's venues to a global audience. During the 3-day event, over 73,500 scheduled meetings will take place between organisations present and hosted buyers from 90 countries. The Experience Oxfordshire Venues Guide can be viewed online at experienceoxfordshire.org/oxfordshire-venue-guide.
A water sports enthusiast has paddleboarded across the English Channel in memory of his niece to raise £15,000 for childhood cancer research. John Bartlett, 56, from Garsington, completed the challenge in honour of Pearl Dixie Bartlett Bundy, who died aged 10 in 2017 after being diagnosed with Ewing's sarcoma, a form of bone cancer. Mr. Bartlett suffers from sciatica, causing a pain that runs from the lower back down through each leg, and as a result completed the challenge sitting down. He said there was no chance of being able to stand. The pain was just too much. I just had to make a decision at the start, and once I made that decision, I was fine. You just go into a mindset then and start grinding it out. At no point did I think we can't do this. It was just about not overthinking it. Get your first mile done, then working in 3 mile stints. Mr. Bartlett completed the paddleboard crossing alongside his brother Jamie, Pearl's dad. The pair set off from Dungeness in Kent at 6:30 a.m. and arrived in Boulogne-sur-Mer, France, after around 7.5 hours. The challenge was part of Pearl Power, a fund at the Children and Young People's Cancer Association, CCLG, set up by Jamie and his wife Rachel to raise money for research into finding kinder, more effective treatments for all types of childhood cancer with poor outcomes. It has raised almost £160,000 for CCLG, helping the charity, together with the Bone Cancer Research Trust, Great Ormond Street Hospital Charity, and Ewing's Sarcoma Research Trust, to recently fund 4 vital new bone cancer research projects as part of an £800,000 collaboration. A fundraising page set up for the Channel Crossing is still open. This was the Bartlett brothers' second Paddle for Pearl event, having already paddled 100 kilometres across Scotland from coast to coast. John said the Channel Crossing was a test of both mental and physical endurance. He said, physically, it's probably one of the toughest challenges, because with cycling, for example, you can have easy sections and tough sections, so it's peaks and troughs. Whereas with paddleboarding, it's just solid, non-stop, so you don't get any respite. He said his niece was at the front of his mind throughout the journey. It was very much in memory of Pearl, and raising this money is really important for helping other people not to have to experience the pain that we did, whether that's the child or the family around them, he added.
Cricket. Former England fast bowler Stephen Finn believes the Australian media's decision to provoke all-rounder captain Ben Stokes could backfire at the Ashes. Stokes's arrival in Perth this week was met with front-page jibes from the West Australian newspaper, which branded him cocky captain complainer and dubbed his team's methods as dopey. It continues a long-running tradition of the local press taking aim at England's sides, with the now-retired Stuart Broad a favourite target of previous trips. But Finn thinks such slings and arrows will only bring out the best of the combative Stokes. Finn, who was part of England's last success down under in 2010-11, said, "I think Ben Stokes thrives when he has a point to prove. You know there are players you really don't want to provoke because it makes them even better and even more determined. He falls into that category. I saw him a couple of weeks ago and you could see behind the eyes that he sees the significance of this tour. This leadership won't be timid or meek. You have to be wary because the Australian press want to trip you up and find chinks in your armour, but if you're sensible and respectful, I don't see any reason you can't embrace the challenge of playing cricket out there." Inspired by his own victorious trip 15 years ago, Finn even believes England are capable of redirecting the public heat back towards the hosts if they enjoy early successes. "When I first went out there, I was taken aback by just how much it was you against us. Getting off the plane, it was TV cameras in your face, paparazzi outside the hotel, taxi driver saying, 'You're useless, you're going to get hammered.' But Australians respect people who win. If you puff your chest out like we did in 2010-11 and push back, it can turn the other way. By the time we'd bowled them out for 98 on Boxing Day, they really turned on Australia and it almost felt like they were supporting us. That's the challenge, and it feels like something Stokes and head coach Brendan McCullum could do." Finn's new memoir reflects his personal anguish at being omitted from that Boxing Day test, despite taking 14 wickets in the first 3 matches, a decision he has broadly made peace with in retirement. Whether the current regime would make the same call, given their attraction to risk and focus on attacking cricket, is open to debate. You beat yourself up about it, and there's still a sense of missed opportunity, but it was the right decision, he said.
The best and worst secondary schools in Oxfordshire for GCSE results have been revealed in a new league table. Data published by the government shows how many pupils at each school achieved a strong pass grade 9 to 5 in English and maths for the 2024 to 2025 GCSE academic year. Grade 9 is the equivalent to an A star star, the very best result a student can get, while 5 is a strong grade C under the old system. Topping the table in Oxfordshire is St Helen and St Catherine in Abingdon, where an impressive 98% received grades 9 to 5 during this summer's GCSEs. Head teacher Sarah Rolling said she is delighted by the results for her school, describing it as a testament to pupils' hard work and commitment, while paying tribute to the expert and dedicated teachers who are always centred on the needs, ambitions and voices of girls and young women. She added, "It is also a powerful reflection of our wider school culture, where outstanding results are the product, not the purpose, of an education that values engagement, enthusiasm and curiosity across all aspects of school life. Whether in the classroom or on the sports field, where we also rank top in Oxfordshire, or in music, drama and a wide range of co-curricular activities, our students are encouraged to pursue their interests and talents, enabling them to excel across the board. St Helen and St Catherine was named Independent Girls School of the Year at the National Independent Schools of the Year Awards in 2025. Oxford's Doverbrooks came in at a close second, with 91.3% of the pupils at the Summertown School receiving grades 9 to 5. Completing the top three is another all-girls school, Didcot Girls School, which saw 71.8% of its girls achieve strong results. In Oxford, the Swan School in Marston Ferry Road had achieved 68.3% to take fourth place. The Cherwell School in the same road saw 66.2% strong results this summer, and Matthew Arnold in Botley had 65.2%. The poorest performing school that had data and wasn't a specialist or foreign student school was Carterton Community College, which had just 17.1% of pupils achieve strong results. The school was contacted for comment, but did not reply.
The number of people who have driven their cars through Oxford's new congestion charging points, or how many fines have been given out, will not be available for another month. The charge, which affects six city roads, means motorists will be charged £5 for driving through charging points at certain times without a permit. Those who fail to pay the £5 charge by midnight the next day will face a £70 fine, falling to £35 if paid within 14 days. Oxfordshire County Council said they will publish an online dashboard with a range of data. This will include how many people have driven through different congestion charging points, how many fines have been issued, traffic journey times and bus journey times. But despite the public and councillors wanting to know these figures, this dashboard will not be made live until early December. Paul Petrillo asked how many cars had driven through congestion charging points without a permit since the scheme went live in a written question ahead of the full council meeting on November the 4th. Councillor Andrew Gant, Cabinet Member for Transport Management, said, "This and other associated data will be published as part of the ongoing monitoring of the scheme. We start to publish such data as soon as it is considered appropriate." When asked why it could not be published sooner, a spokesperson said, "The council will publish data promptly with website updates every month where data is available. More frequent updates would not be feasible, particularly as most data sources require significant processing to produce results that can be easily interpreted, and shorter time periods may not be representative of actual trends." But Conservative Councillor Liam Walker, leader of the Oxfordshire Alliance opposition group, said, "This rationale simply isn't good enough." He added, It's disappointing the council isn't willing to release basic enforcement figures until December, especially when this data is clearly of public interest. Thanks to the work of the Place Scrutiny Committee, we've now secured a commitment to monthly monitoring of traffic and enforcement data going forwards, something that should have been in place from the start. Scrutiny pushed for greater transparency and expect the council to honour that commitment without further delay. As of Tuesday, there have been 54,995 permit applications, with 46,362 approved, 1,293 declined, and 773 cancelled by the applicant. The number of applications awaiting approval stands at 6,597. A total of 217 permits for frequent hospital patients have been issued.
A baby declared stillborn at the John Radcliffe was rejected by a mortuary because she was in fact still alive. Emma Cox was 17 when she gave birth to twins in 2011 after losing a third baby early in pregnancy. When she went into labour at 24 weeks, one baby, Hope, was resuscitated and taken to the neonatal unit. The other, Lily, was declared stillborn but couldn't be accepted by the mortuary because she was later found to be alive. The shocking allegation has been uncovered in a joint investigation into the Oxford University Hospital Trust's maternity and neonatal unit by the New Statesman and Channel 4 News. The investigation has heard from more than 20 families who say they have lost babies, had children born with severe disabilities, or suffered serious harm themselves as a result of poor care at the trust. Ms. Cox said, "At 24 weeks, I went into spontaneous labour. They were born. I was told that one of them was stillborn and the other one was taken and resuscitated in the neonatal unit. A short time later, Lily was brought back to me and they said the mortuary was unable to take her because she was actually alive." Miss Cox was denied access to the neonatal unit and said she begged for Lily to be treated, but doctors refused, she claimed, saying it was too late to intervene. She and her family tried to keep Lily alive on a radiator at the John Radcliffe for 12 hours. Both babies died. Emma's medical notes, obtained 14 years later, reveal a doctor wrote, "I have encouraged the parents and grandparents to keep the little girl with them and warned them she may live for many hours." In September, the government announced an investigation into the Oxford Hospital's Trust's maternity and neonatal services. Health Secretary Wes Streeting told the joint investigation the revelations were scandalous and pointed to a moral failure in the system. He has ordered NHS England to investigate the allegations of failings contained in the reporting. Simon Crowther, interim chief executive at Oxford University Hospitals Trust, said the Trust sends its heartfelt apologies to any family who has not received the standard of care they deserve and our condolences to those who tragically have experienced loss. He added, "We work hard to listen with care and compassion to the concerns that have been raised, and we remain fully committed to learning from them." The Trust is participating openly and transparently in the National Maternity and Neonatal Investigation led by Baroness Amos, and we welcome this opportunity to reflect, improve, and ensure that every voice is heard. However, we recognise that there is much more to do, and we remain resolute in our determination to go further.
An Oxfordshire fire engine will be donated to Ukraine to help defend the nation against Russia. The lorry was being retired by Charlbury Fire Station after a brand new fire engine was delivered. The outgoing fire engine will be driven 1,500 miles down to the war-torn country. A Charlbury Fire Station spokesman said, "We recently shared that our trusty old fire engine was being retired after we received our new one last week. We have been informed that the old fire engine will be making its way to Ukraine next week, being driven by one of our colleagues, Barney, from Deddington Fire Station. Roughly 1,500 miles in 3 days is the plan. This is thanks to a partnership with a charity that provides fire equipment to Ukraine to support them in defending themselves against Russia. It's incredible to think it's going from quiet old Charlbury over to Ukraine. We hope Barney and EBK have a safe trip over there, and we will share some updates and pictures from their journey once it begins. It comes as Ukrainian drones struck a major oil refinery in Russia's Volgograd region for the second time in almost 3 months, Ukraine's general staff said on Thursday. Russian officials did not confirm the attack, although the local governor said drones started a fire at an unspecified industrial facility in the region. Ukraine's general staff said in a statement that the attack took place the previous day. The refinery is the largest producer of fuel and lubricants in Russia's southern federal district, processing more than 15 million tons of crude annually, about 5.6% of the country's total refining capacity, according to Ukrainian officials. Russia and Ukraine have traded almost daily assaults on each other's energy infrastructure as diplomatic efforts to stop the nearly 4-year war make no impact on the battlefield. Ukraine's long-range drone strikes on Russian refineries aim to deprive Moscow of the oil export revenue it needs to pursue its full-scale invasion. Russia wants to cripple the Ukrainian power grid, seeking to deny civilians access to heat, light and running water, in what Kiev officials say is an attempt to weaponize winter. Ukrainian President Zelensky said foreign countries are helping Kiev in its efforts to keep the power grid operating amid Russia's onslaught. Practically every day, our power engineers, repair brigades and the State Emergency Service of Ukraine are carrying out restorations on site after attacks. Hits keep occurring across various points, especially in our communities, and especially near the Russian border and close to the front, Mr. Zelensky said on Wednesday.
Oxford United under-18s delivered a stunning display, demolishing Barnet with a remarkable 9-goal haul in a one-sided encounter. It was goals galore on Saturday the 1st of November for Oxford. The young Ewes showcased their attacking prowess against a Barnet side that had recently triumphed in the Youth Cup, knocking out Luton Town on penalties just days prior. However, the visitors fielded a heavily rotated squad, which quickly became evident as the game unfolded. Kesh Purcell was the standout performer, netting his third hat-trick in 5 matches. He was ably supported by Mason Vaughan and Mubarak Abolade, who both contributed 2 goals each. The scoring was rounded off by Ethan Dickinson-Annell and Kevin Appiah, both of whom added their names to the score sheet in the latter stages of the match. The home side started the game with intent, creating numerous chances. Purcell opened the scoring just 15 minutes in. Under-16 Vaughan then continued his goal-scoring form, finishing into an open net to make it 2-0. Kesh wrapped up the first half with his second and Oxford's third, arguably the pick of the goals, as he beat the keeper from the edge of the box with a powerful finish into the bottom corner. Despite the scoreline, Oxford could have easily been further ahead, with several missed opportunities in the first half. The second half saw Purcell complete his hat-trick just 3 minutes after the restart, marking his 10th goal in 5 games. Abolade finally got on the score sheet in the 68th minute, deftly finishing through the keeper's legs for Oxford's 5th goal. Just 2 minutes later, he added another, lobbing the keeper with finesse to make it 6. Appiah then joined the scoring spree, executing a near-identical finish to Abolade's 2nd to extend the lead to 7-0. Dickinson-Annell scored his first goal for the under-18s in the 81st minute, tapping into an empty net. Vaughan capped off the scoring with his 2nd goal of the match, bringing the final tally to 9-0.
A prime hotel and leisure complex in Oxford city centre has been put up for sale with a guide price of £30.94 million. Oxford Castle Quarter in Castle Street is home to Malmaison, a boutique 95-bedroom hotel and 39,134 square foot of leisure units. Current occupiers include Slug and Lettuce and Namast Village, among other restaurants, bars and leisure operators. Global real estate advisor CBRE has been appointed by the Westgate Partnership for the sale, which has been described as an investment opportunity of historic significance. The estate is fully let, benefiting from a weighted average unexpired lease term of 14.8 years. The site's rich heritage dates back to its origins as a royal castle in 1071. After serving as a prison between 1785 and 1996, the property underwent a major conversion and was first opened as a hotel and leisure complex in 2006 and has retained its architectural significance. Scientists from Oxford have discovered a method to observe DNA function inside living cells. The dramatic breakthrough has the potential to enable the identification of alterations that can lead to diseases such as heart disease and cancer. The newly developed technique, known as MCC-Ultra, captures the intricate details of gene control, a level of precision that until now has been previously unattainable. This advancement has been hailed as a critical step towards understanding genetic operation, the onset of disease, and potential remedies. The human genome, made up of DNA, serves as the body's master control blueprint within the cell nucleus. The genome is thought to contain roughly 3.2 billion DNA base pairs per cell, intricately packed within a microscopic space. If it was fully extended, it would measure about 2 meters in total. This compact DNA constantly twists and loops into 3D configurations, determining gene activity or dormancy, similar to how a circuit board operates. Prior to this breakthrough, experts could only observe such interactions in a low-resolution format. Professor James Davis from the University of Oxford's Radcliffe Department of Medicine is the lead author on the project. He said, "For the first time, we can see how the genome's control switches are physically arranged inside cells."
Acclaimed Oxford author Sir Philip Pullman launched the final instalment of his latest trilogy with a talk at the Sheldonian Theatre. The author, who lives in a village outside the city, was at the Sheldonian in Broad Street for a sold-out talk. The 79-year-old spoke to broadcaster and podcaster Hannah McInnes about The Rosefield, his latest novel featuring Lyra Silvertongue, who lives in a parallel universe. The Rosefield is the final instalment of the Book of Dust trilogy, which follows the His Dark Materials trilogy. The first 5 books have sold 49 million copies worldwide. Sir Philip said he had started to write his memoirs and had written about 20 pages. He told the Sunday Times, "I'm up to 9 years old. I'm not sure I'll have the patience to write it." The latest trilogy refers to the migrant crisis, terrorism and unpredictable weather events.
The organiser of a series of festivals in Jericho said they could have to end as he needs someone else to step in and take over. During the past 5 years, John Mayer from Jericho has organised a series of free Lazy Saturday, Lazy Sunday and Oktoberfest events in Mount Place. Local bands play, and food, including hot dogs, is provided by local businesses. Usually, 150 to 200 people turn out to take part in a local celebration. Now aged 75 and experiencing a number of health issues, Mr. Mayor wants another person to take the lead. Mr. Mayor added, "I'm 75. I walk with a stick and sometimes I get a frozen shoulder. No idea why. These events don't make money, but the local musicians enjoy them, and so does everyone who comes along. There is a lot of bureaucracy involved with the council because it's a public space. I need someone to take over." So far, about 15 free public events have taken place. Mr. Mayor started the events after Oxford City Council revamped Mount Place and volunteers from the Greening Jericho group put in some lovely plants. It became a nice communal area for people to use, except they weren't using it, he said. Mr. Mayor, a journalist and publisher, said his events, which he was given permission to do just before the 2020 lockdown, were designed for people to enjoy right beside the canal. Each one has been attended by up to about 250 people, with donations going towards the bands. Mr. Mayor organises about 30 events a year under the My Jericho umbrella, which also features themed walks in the area and guest talks at St. Barnabas Church. But he said the Mount Place gatherings takes the most work. "I have to submit a health and safety form to the City Council. An event plan has to be approved. It costs £120 to put it on, and you have to put a deposit down," he said. "I'm getting old and tired, and I think this might be the end for them, unless somebody wants to come in and do them." He said there was actually a lot of enjoyment in it. "I'd happily hold the hand of anybody who wants to take it over," Mr. Mayor added. Born in Guyana, South America in 1950, Mr. Mayor and his family moved to the UK in the early 1960s. After working as a teacher, he joined the BBC as a producer and director at the end of the 1970s until 1985, when he worked as a producer and director for the BBC, ITV and Channel 4 on a freelance basis until 2008. He has also been a senior lecturer in media and communications at Coventry University from 2005 to 2012 and held a series of other posts. New artwork has been created for the walkway close to the railway bridge in Botley Road in Oxford. Network Rail has provided the new walkway for pedestrians and cyclists as part of a £231 million scheme to upgrade Oxford Station. The walkway, which opened in August, connects Botley Road and Frideswyde Square, with cyclists and pedestrians sharing the space. Cyclists are asked to dismount in the 4-metre-wide space, but some are refusing to do so, and one woman pedestrian was hit by a cyclist earlier this year and left injured. British Transport Police has pledged to patrol the walkway from time to time and hand out on-the-spot fines to cyclists who continue to flout the rules. Now, new artwork has been designed by local artist Chris Shipton to brighten up the space. One sequence of images charts the key milestones of the construction, from the discovery of a hidden Victorian arch beneath the road to the installation of new water and sewer connections and the operation to slide newly built concrete structures into place. The second part of the commission offers a portrait of West Oxford, its landmarks, businesses, people, and often overlooked histories. Mr. Shipton developed the work through months of conversations with residents, businesses, and stakeholders, as well as spending his own time walking and rediscovering the area. A project of this scale has huge impact, and often the extraordinary story is lost behind the disruption, said Mr. Shipton. "These illustrations are here to help us understand what's happening, what's been achieved, and what makes West Oxford so special," Botley Road has been closed at the railway bridge since 2023 and is not due to reopen until August 2026. The major scheme has been hit by repeated delays, and residents and businesses in the area have complained repeatedly about how their lives have been disrupted. Noisy work to install the foundations of a new railway bridge has caused a disturbance in recent months. Giles Clark, principal programme sponsor at Network Rail, said, "From our regular meetings with local residents, businesses and councillors, we understand the impact the project is having. While we're working 7 days a week to reopen Botley Road in August 2026, Chris's artwork brings to life what's happening behind the hoardings and highlights what a fascinating place West Oxford is. Since we reset the programme of work at Botley Road in January this year, we have hit all our key milestones. Most recently, with the opening of the improved walkway, which improves access for all, and we remain committed to opening the road in August next year. The work we are undertaking is vital to transforming railway travel in the city and enabling projects such as the reopening of the Cowley branch line, which was confirmed last week, and East-West Rail."
An Oxford University student has been found not guilty of damaging Stonehenge. Neam Lynch, 23, was acquitted of the crime following a 10-day trial at Salisbury Crown Court, as were her fellow activists Rajan Naidu, 74, and Luke Watson, 36. The trio targeted Stonehenge as part of an ongoing fossil fuel protest by the direct action group Just Stop Oil. The ancient monument was attacked the day before last year's summer solstice, where around 15,000 people were due to gather and celebrate. Naidu and Lynch had been accused of using two colour blasters filled with corn flour, talc and an orange dye to spray the World Heritage Site on June the 19th last year. Watson had bought the equipment used in the attack and had driven his co-accused to Stonehenge that morning. They had all denied charges of damaging an ancient protected monument and causing a public nuisance during the trial at Salisbury Crown Court. The trio accepted taking part in the protest and cited in their defence reasonable excuse and their rights under Articles 10 and 11 of the European Convention on Human Rights to freedom of speech and freedom to protest. Jurors had been told it cost £620 to remove the orange powder from the stones. Meanwhile, Judge Paul Dugdale informed the jury before their verdict that they should decide the case on only the evidence heard in court, and it was for the prosecution to prove the allegations. He also warned them to put their own views about Just Stop Oil to one side when deliberating. Simon Jones, prosecuting, said, putting it simply, "We say they were all in it together. The prosecution say that this is an act of blatant and clear vandalism. The intention is undoubtedly to make a statement." Mr. Jones added, "Stonehenge is arguably the best recognised and architecturally sophisticated prehistoric stone circle in the world, built around 5,000 years ago. The site in Wiltshire is visited by members of the public from all over the world, providing both an education and spiritual experience. The stones are a protected ancient monument." Judge Paul Dugdale told the jury in his legal directions they had to assess where the balance lies in the case and whether a conviction would be proportionate interference with the defendant's rights. "In any society, there'll be those whose opinions we agree with and those whose opinions we disagree with," he said. "The essence of a free society and freedom of speech is that everyone is entitled to express their opinion, even when we disagree with what they say." The jury found all three not guilty of the two charges after deliberating for 6 hours.
A new way to explore the Cotswolds has been launched. The Cotswold Collective app promises to connect residents and visitors with exclusive perks across more than 400 local places and experiences making it easier to discover and support independent businesses across the region. The app, designed to help users shop, eat and explore with purpose, has already attracted more than 1,000 pre-registrations. Sarah O'Neill, founder of Cotswold Collective, said, "This launch is a big moment for us and for the region. The app is about celebrating connection, helping people find new favourites, support local businesses and feel part of the community. It's been designed to make supporting small brands simpler, more rewarding and more visible." For more information, visit the Cotswold Collective website. A new Oriental all-you-can-eat buffet has opened in a town centre. The Mandarin in Market Square Bicester opened its doors after much anticipation. Offering more than 40 dishes, desserts and cocktails, the self-service buffet describes itself as a family-friendly destination. The restaurant next door to the Fat Zebra Cafe described the first week of opening as amazing. A spokesperson for the Mandarin said, "Whether you're looking for a quick lunch, relaxed dinner or a place to gather with friends and family, there's something for everyone." The unit was previously occupied by Toho 35, which closed earlier this year. The boss of Sephora UK has said that the high street is not dead amid the opening of a new store in Oxford. Shoppers poured into the Westgate Centre in the city on Friday afternoon, November the 7th, for the grand opening of the brand's latest chain, which sells personal care and beauty products. The brand's UK Managing Director, Sarah Boyd, spoke at the grand opening about the choice to come to the city. "Oxford is one of the cities that we really wanted to come to right from the beginning of our rollout strategy," she said. "We knew that in terms of size, it's not one of the biggest cities in the UK, so it was never going to be the first, second or third on the list, but we were really conscious that there was a fantastic community here. Obviously, with all of the local people and those who come from the surrounding areas, we think the shopping centre gets a really good pull, but also with a big student community and tourist hotspot, considering the historic significance of the city. There are a lot of students, a lot of tourists, and a lot of excitement. So it was a city that we wanted to get to as soon as possible. It was a question of finding the right location for us because our stores are quite big. So it's difficult to find high street locations that work for that. So it was more a question of working with a shopping centre to see when we could get the right space here." Oliver Bonus is set to open a new store next door to Sephora soon, and the managing director sees the increase in business as a positive for Oxford. "The tenant mix in the mall, and this part of it specifically, is great for us," said Ms. Boyd. "We are very much a traffic driver, so what malls love about us is that we drive a lot of incremental traffic into the store. Zara opposite us is another good example where we know that between us we can really generate a high footfall increase. It just proves that the UK high street is far from being dead. It's actually really vibrant, really exciting and constantly changing and evolving." Despite some recent closures in Westgate, including shoe shops Dr. Martens and Solent Raider, Ms. Boyd outlined why the shopping centre is the perfect home for Sephora. "Westgate is a nice mall with a nice environment. You enjoy shopping here and you've got some great tenants already," she added. "It's very central, so it's not that I would have been against the idea of going on any of the external high street locations per se. It was more that we were going to get the size here and the landlords have been great partners in getting that to work."
And that is all the news for this week. If you have any comments or feedback about OxTalk, please feel free to contact us by phoning 07496 062 280. That is 07496 062 280. Please remember to leave your name and contact number with your message, or you can send us an email to mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and past editions are available on our website, www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can listen to these editions directly or download them online. If you need any help or have any further queries, please feel free to contact us. That is all for now. We hope you have a wonderful week, and thank you for listening.